You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions or anything to share so far? And can you still hear me okay? You can hear okay? So just to let you know, if, especially if it's your first time, but and to remind you if it's not, that it takes a while to get into the flow. So if you feel like there were 20 minutes for walking meditation, you had to pee, you waited in line for 10 minutes, you peed, and then you had 5 minutes to get to the hall and you didn't do any walking and you've already lost your retreat, you can just notice how it feels to think that and let it go. There'll be time for walking meditation after this, before dinner, if all goes well. So sometimes the people who do the recordings require that I give a title. And usually I don't give a title, but today we can call it Nothing to Prove. Yes, please. The air conditioning, okay. Okay, I'll try this. We can do the experiment and see. I find it's it loses something. And it also can be more relaxing when the sound is through the mic. You can let me know. Okay, is that on?
Yeah.
Yeah? Can you hear me? Is that better? Okay. I lose my hands this way is one of the problems. So having a whole weekend to do nothing, for people who wish we had a month, it may seem like almost nothing, but it's a good amount of time. And it's already part of our practice to feel how to honor that time without getting uptight about it. And there's not a secret. It's just, that's the situation. We start to feel like, oh, this could be so important, or it is, or it should be, but it isn't. And then we buy into pressure. We start to go along with pressure. And we believe in pressure. So we don't notice that we're now going along with pressuring myself, or trying to put pressure on the meditation, or whatever. But because the way of pressure doesn't actually fit, eventually we have some signs, like maybe in the body, some physiological sign could be, this doesn't fit, which we usually ignore for a while, and then eventually we notice that pressure doesn't actually work. So if we can realize from the beginning that it's hard to enter, we're in the middle of something, and we don't know what the something is. It's like an ant, maybe in an anthill. We know we're in the middle of something, many things. And so one thing I'd like to start with today is an invitation to realize you are in the middle of it. You're already in the middle of whatever this is. Whatever it is already. Whatever it isn't already. And that's good. We can remind ourselves we're not actually trying to make something up that sounds good. I mean, maybe you are. I don't think so. But then we do, all the time, make up stuff that sounds good or bad. One or the other. All the time about everything. And we believe it until it hurts so much or it falls apart in our face and poof, we remember that we're interested in what it is. I love hearing about the ongoing discoveries of remains of our ancestors. And I love to just watch how we go along, still with an idea that human beings began a few thousand years ago. We suddenly got really human a few thousand years ago. And then we just discover another human being remains from 50,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago, 75,000 years ago, with signs of being very human. Just recently, there was a discovery of the remains of a spine, the fossil of a spine, from, I think it was 3.3 million years ago, or maybe it was 330,000, but like, so far beyond what we've been tracking so far. And that the people who lived 50 and 60,000 years ago did things that now there are signs of some spirituality there. And so our really very limited idea of what human beings are capable of, I think, gets called into question. And I think it's just a wonderful day when our thinking gets stretched or broken open. The possibility that we aren't so special now, and that the spiritual path isn't so special, that it's just really natural. Which I don't mean by natural biological, but that possible with our biology is a very natural lovely, important, transformative power of a human being. Something that is beyond biology, but goes well with it. And so now recently, there's lots of studies about the effects of meditation, the effects of mindfulness. And I think it's good, it's encouraging to our thinking. When we need encouragement of that kind. When we come to those days where we feel like, no, I'm really wasting my time, and that's not good. I should be using my time well. And then we hear that mindfulness is good for the health. It gives you more time for your work, for your creativity, for your relationships, etc. I love that the puzzle, what would be puzzle in Hebrew?
Puzzle.
Puzzle? Okay. The puzzle of being human includes that doing something that's about the immeasurable. It's about going beyond what we can measure. Also has some measurable results. Sometimes. Sometimes the measurable results are that you feel more messy, less in control. Which, in other words, would be more available to the fact that we're not in control. And thank goodness we're not. With some room to notice what happens when I think I'm in control. How do I behave? What's the perspective on life and creatures when I think I'm in control and I should be and I am? I did it. I think there's a lot in there that I would love to hear about. I would invite you to go into it, and I'd love to hear what you find. But I wanted to pick out one thing that happens for today. And maybe we'll go there with the poem that I have today. I really wasn't planning to bring yet another Wendell Berry poem, but it came. So Wendell Berry is a US poet who's still living. Just as a reminder that there are some good things in the country of my birth. And this is a poem that I came across over a decade ago. Almost 20 years ago. It's called Praise. So the title of the poem is Praise, and then he goes right along. The title's not separate from the poem in its meaning. Praise. And then he says, number one, don't think of it. Praise, don't think of it. And then there's maybe a little bit hard English word, vanity.
Hevel.
Hevel?
Hevel. Yohara.
Yohara.
Yohara. Yohara.
Like arrogance.
Okay, so I'll describe what I think he means by vanity. Vanity is concern with my appearance.
Also praise.
and that you should appreciate my appearance. That's how I think of it. It would be like being very interested in praise, basically. Maybe being addicted to praise. Okay? Praise? In Hebrew? There must be really good words for praise. So praise, number one, don't think of it. Vanity is absence. Be here. And he wrote this also way before I read it, so now everyone says be here. But he's this prophet who was saying it way before we were ready to hear it. Be here. Here is the root and stem, unappraisable, on whose life your life depends. Praise, don't think of it. Vanity is absence. Be here. Here is the root and stem. And then he says, unappraisable, which is actually a play on words. It doesn't have to do so much with praise, but unappraisable means you can't give it a price. You can't say the value. So it would be, like in English, we also say priceless, meaning not that it has a lesser price, but that it is beyond our reckoning. It's beyond what we can say. It's beyond the territory of numbers and even of knowing. And it's related to the word praise, but not, it's not about getting compliments. It's almost like unapproachable in a certain way. Unapproachable through kind words, unapproachable through looking at the surface, unapproachable by going out there, unapproachable by being worried about how much things are worth. Approachable by tuning into. So the root and stem. Here is the root and stem. So he's giving this clue of getting into the root and stem, which is being here, being in the root and stem. We're in touch with the value that can't be said, that doesn't need or want to be said, and that can't be had. Without being it. Okay, so it's in a very simple way, the preciousness of life that we feel, and we can't almost believe we can feel just by that half a breath that I just felt. It's almost like a ghost. So surprised that it could be so good. And then, oh, wait, where am I and what am I supposed to be doing and how am I doing? Praise, don't think of it. Vanity is absence. Be here. Here is the root and stem, unappraisable, on whose life your life depends. So when we're not sure what to do, one thing that we might try out is watch how is everybody else doing it and try to copy them. Right? I mean, that can be even very respectful. You go into a new culture and you kind of wait and see what they do. And then you do what they do. And it can be tempting to try to use that method with meditation. And with life. But if we can kind of just back up and see, yeah, we don't know what to do. We can't actually, I mean, you might be wondering, what is meditation? You can't really define meditation. So how could you copy it? And so if we just, again, catch ourselves, just like we can catch ourselves when we get uptight because we want to make the most of our time, and then that's the best way to waste our time. Like, really waste it. Burn it off. Not have it anymore. Fruitlessly. Coming into here and feeling the rootedness and the sproutingness, the branching outness, root and stem. It's grounding and expansive. It's exploring under the earth and exploring in the air. And those unappraisable movements are precious, and when we're in them, we know that by feeling it. We don't know about it. We know there's not a good description of it. We know that when we acknowledge that we're in it. So while it can be helpful to hear what other people do, don't let that replace the beauty of rooting and stemming as here. So following a system as a system, following a technique as a technique instead of as an art. We might get systematic results. And sometimes that's a breakthrough. It's so good. But if that's all we give ourselves, no chance for art, only technique. If we try to stay true to the technique, to the system, to the structure, we're staying true to what's not alive in it. Does that make sense? And it's easy to think of, let's say, the violinist who's so technically perfect and there's no music. It's easy to think of these examples. Or a garden that's so technically well cared for and is not beautiful. It's impressive, but it's appraisable. It's approachable via praise. It's approachable via description, via technique. It's like asking for dependable, reliable results. It's saying, we don't want nature to be too messy. We don't want any surprises. We want it to be useful. We want it to be a copy of what I have in my head. Which means I want it to be somehow some confirmation of me. Because I'm not in touch with how this is already enough. So we can feel the difference in our own. It's not only to think of those people out there with their chemical gardens and feel how we can praise ourselves. When we're practicing meditation, we can hear already the necessary contradiction in the phrase practicing meditation. We're trying to repeat something that's not repeatable. And yet it's worthwhile to make that experiment, to keep trying to put into practice naturalness. But if we can have the emphasis on the naturalness and the openness to surprise, and notice where it comes from when I'm angry that I'm not getting the results that I planned on, and what I'm willing to do to try to get them, to make my mind shut up, to make my heart open, to make my body quiet or joyful. So it's not to give up and never use technique. I'm not saying never do anything, which would be the end of life. But an openness to your own sensitivity, to what takes technique into art. What's willing to be humble enough to notice that the mind has been trained to be busy in certain ways, and so it is. And so what? That's a good observation, that's all. You noticed what's happening. Your mind has been trained to be busy in these certain ways, and it is. That's not a bad sign. It shows that the mind is open to be trained. So now, what kind of training? The kind of training, the kind of approach that we have will partly determine the kind of response that comes. If I want my brain, my mind, or even if we talk about the thinking, if I want my thinking to behave like a dog, in the way that we think of training dogs. That could be worthwhile sometimes. There could be room for some love and not only obedience. But what if there's so much more room? What if our narrow idea of what's possible in a human being doesn't need to be in the way? Is our thinking, is our mind, is our capacity for creativity in thinking? Is it something that goes with obedience, which we obtain through punishment and reward? Good dog, bad dog. I'm just really not sure that creativity comes out of that, except kind of secondarily. Maybe we get enough little bit of quiet from that, that some creativity comes out the side accidentally. If you think of a time that you, maybe, has anyone seen a wild animal? Not like a wild animal in a zoo, but actually a wild animal? I mean, you have, because there's birds everywhere. If you remember a moment of seeing a wild animal, something that happens to come for a moment, for a flash, or for a while. And the lightness and the thrill of it is exactly because it came and it left. You didn't make it come and you didn't make it go. So if we can be open to feeling when we're getting uptight and trying too hard, but not then just dropping everything and saying, Jaya said to do nothing, because I'm not saying that. Please. Sometimes people come at the end of the retreat and said, you told us to do nothing, so I've been doing nothing, but I didn't really... I'm not telling you to lie down, I'm telling you you can lie down. And that I do. Whatever posture is deeper for you, please do that. Please. Why do anything else? Does it make sense to do anything else? Even if you feel a little bit ashamed to lie down because you're into sitting and you're a good sitter and hear yourself. Or you want to lie down to fit in because everybody's lying down. No, they're not. Because you're sitting up. Sometimes people actually think that by sitting up when they feel to, they would be disturbing the others who are lying down. And if we could feel, if at all, which I doubt, there is any disturbance in each of us trying our best, sincerely, to feel what is more fruitful and supportive of freedom. If any disturbance could be there, it could be in not listening to yourself, into what your best guess is, as long as it's in stillness in the hall and in silence for the weekend. What is your best guess? So I'm not saying sit up for 30 seconds and then lie down for 30 seconds and then you feel like sitting up again. No. The chance at the beginning of the meditation to feel if your body lies down or sits up or stands, or actually you need a chair. And then to bear with that experiment, what happens? Whatever experiment you make, you can't take yourself out of being in the middle of this mystery. But make your experiment. Sit or lie down for that meditation. Just trust your experiment and follow through. And when we feel ourselves getting more uptight, we can it's not just, oh, I'm tight, let me relax. I've got to relax, I'm too uptight. It's not this binary thing. It's not just do the opposite. It's let that friction of how being uptight rubs against what would be natural, what would fit you. I don't mean what would be easy, but what would really fit your spirit. Or if you're feeling like I'm not quite in touch with honoring this life, I don't feel the preciousness. If we remember the subject is being here in the preciousness. And so when there's friction, it can point you back in to here, to just being in your direct experience with gentleness, with wonder. And often with the masters, people who are masters in their art, especially towards the ends of their lives, they went for the simpler and the simpler and the simpler. They didn't need to prove anything of what a great artist they were. They weren't interested in being a great artist. They weren't interested in being an artist. They were interested in something, and that's all. And they just followed through on that. So if we're interested in the art of meditation, even being willing not to get sidetracked, concerned about whether I'm meditating right or not. What is meditation? Why is it important? Not how would I describe meditation? How would I define it? But why is it important? And being into that and following through. That music. So as we allow this natural shift, which is luckily it's natural, from technique into art, from trying too hard into a discovery or even rediscovery of loving life that we do, even though we may also hate it. But somewhere we can't stop a love of life. I don't mean the survival instinct. When I say love of life. We start to get the hang of that things do go unexpectedly, even we could call problems happen. I'm trying to make the mind quiet and it's not. I ask the body really, really nicely to be still and it isn't. I told my heart to stop hurting and it hurt more. Or the bliss is so much I can't stand it. Or am I the only one having an orgasm? Or this is so boring. All of it happens. Well, not every single person has an orgasm in the meditation. only a few people have reported that over the 20 years. In the shift into the art of being here, the willingness to be surprised, the willingness to work with what we have as it is, the willingness to be in touch with what is, and really in touch with, so that it's felt and not a thought. Being willing to be in that knowing of the immeasurable, the knowing of the mystery, the knowing of being the presence of mystery, being in it, right in the middle of it. And knowing what we can't do, what's not in our control, not in our hands, and starting to learn what helps. Like, what kind of outer and inner atmosphere help? What kind of inner and outer landscape? What brings a willingness to be still? Which is not so much about trying to make things stop moving. But being still in staying with what you love most. And not touching the sense of lack or not enough that wants praise, wants confirmation, feels like I have something to prove. Has been trying the whole life to prove it. So just briefly in these last few minutes, there's a couple of things that can happen along the way. Discovering how to let the art happen. And one is that we come across absences, we come across things that are missing. The way that your father wasn't there, he really wasn't. Or your mother wasn't there, she really wasn't, or whatever. Or someone that you've lost. Or a quality that really you don't have. Or something you don't receive from your partner, your child, your sister, your mother, your whoever. Your culture. Where the potential of human being isn't fulfilled, wasn't, and isn't. And sometimes we come across that hole, that absence. We come across what's at the root of my addiction to praise, my addiction to trying to fill the gap in some way. It's your lucky day. It doesn't feel like it, but it's your lucky day. Coming across that was actually missing. Or is, and not going anywhere from there, just facing the whole, the absence, which is kind of trusting some kind of bigger sense of life that can handle that big gaping hole. And then life goes on, something happens. If we keep trying to fill the hole from a sense of this is a problem, this is wrong, this is missing, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with life. There's no end. But if we just stay with, yeah, this is missing, or it was, and I can feel it in this ache, or this anger, or whatever. There was a lack, for example, of protection. Or there was a lack of gestures of affection. Or there was a lack of appreciating a beauty that is not measurable. A lack of wonder. It's kind of a sense of acknowledging that we can have room for the whole picture, including the holes, H-O-L-E. And just find out what happens. Mostly just staying still, staying within here, root and stem. And let life do something different this time. It's very challenging because that's where then we compulsively want to fill the hole with something or fix the hole with something. Don't fix, don't fill. Yeah, that's missing. And as we, a second thing that can happen sometimes in response to just letting the whole be there, the H-O-L-E be empty, the absence be absence. And sometimes just energy starts to come in and fill up, and we're not burning it off every second the way we usually do. And so this is another tricky part with resting and deep rest meditation, is that resting is energizing, and not burning off all of our life energy all the time, almost before it's arrived. We go into debt with our life energy. So not burning it off, we start to have energy. Even when you still feel tired, there's energy that's starting to fill up. And it can be fun, it can be scary, but it is intense. It's not special, but it is intense. And it's another edge where our alarm system can turn on when we feel like a certain amount of energy and they're like, ah! Because we're not used to it and because we're not in control of it. And so it's partly this gradual process of trusting that what that energy will do is better than what I would do with it, given a chance. We just learn that time and time and time and time again, and still we don't quite believe it. But gradually through meditation, something starts to happen that it starts to not matter what you believe and what you think. And your trust is growing anyway. So when you find yourself measuring your meditation by how much you trust or don't trust, what you believe, don't believe, what you think, don't think, it's again worthwhile to throw that away, that measurement. The process of wholeness is happening despite what we think is happening, and it's happening despite the quantity of thoughts. Thank you for listening. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the momentum of freedom for all, including ourselves. May all beings be in peace. May there be peace.